Welcome back to the Business Leaders of America podcast, where business leaders come to share their advice and journeys to success with existing and emerging leaders of America. Join us as we delve into the minds of these accomplished individuals, uncovering the strategies and insights that have propelled them to the top. Whether you're an established leader or an emerging force in the business world, this podcast is your go-to source for the knowledge and inspiration needed to navigate the dynamic landscape of American business. Now, here's your host, Dylan Bloyd.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Business Leaders of America podcast. Our guest today is Joa Spearman, founder and CEO of Localore, a platform that has helped over 7 million travelers discover the best local experiences in 200-plus cities worldwide. Joa, a serial entrepreneur and community builder, has led Localore to partnerships with major brands like Nike, Lyft, and JetBlue Airways, generating revenue and recognition as a top travel app by Time, Forbes, and more. In addition to Localore's success, Joa is a trailblazer in the entrepreneurial landscape, garnering significant funding and establishing himself as a sought-after speaker and author. He shares compelling stories from childhood challenges to the TEDx stage. Join us as Joa Spearman shares his insights on entrepreneurship, community building, and his remarkable journey to global impact. Thanks for joining us today, Joa.
Thanks so much for having me, Dylan.
Yeah, not a problem. So after doing a lot of research on your background, man, that was a pretty brief intro and only highlighted a few highlights of your incredible journey. So if you wouldn't mind, can you go into a bit deeper on where you started and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah. You know, what I would say is I exhibited entrepreneurial qualities before I understood what entrepreneurship was. And the older I get, the more I think I understand it. And the definition that Clayton Christensen, the late Harvard professor, that he had was entrepreneurship was the pursuit of resources beyond your what you can really control. And growing up the way that I grew up, I feel like my whole life has been entrepreneurship. I grew up the youngest of three boys, single mom, you know, food stamps and free school lunch and that. And I became the first person in my family to go to college, graduate. I, you know, pursued a career as an entrepreneur. In a lot of ways, foregoing the safer path, I think, of kind of doing the 9-to-5 thing, working for others. And, you know, I've taken my hits as an entrepreneur. It hasn't been all good. As any entrepreneur, I think, will tell you, there's many, many, many ebbs and flows. And I was telling someone this earlier today that I think in a lot of ways, most of my insights, I think, come from lessons in failure more than success. And I think that actually equips me to be more successful in the future. Because I'm still curious about, you know, what works as opposed to just relying on my success bias of the past to say that that's what it works every time.
Oh, that's great. And I have heard that a lot, you know, with people who have made it to your level of success, they seem to learn a little bit more from their failures than their successes, you know, and it gives them, makes them want to push a little bit harder. So thank you for sharing that. I do appreciate that. So Localore, a little more on Localore. It's become a significant player in providing authentic local recommendations globally. How did you navigate the challenges of creating a platform that resonates with diverse cultures and preferences around the world?
Man, you know, Localore, in a way, it's, again, I would say this again, like it hasn't been as successful as I wish it was. I wish it was on par with, let's say, at least on par with like a Yelp or TripAdvisor. Mm-hmm. But what I've realized over the 10 years of running Localore is that authenticity is not mainstream. And so in a lot of ways, when I started Localore, the whole notion was, hey, let's help travelers experience local the way that locals do. You know, so instead of going where tourists go, let's help them go where locals go. And so it started with 12 of my friends in Austin, Texas, recommending where they eat, drink, shop, et cetera. And now we've grown to over 200 cities around the world. And that growth has been largely word of mouth, largely organic. And what I've learned through that is that very basic notion of, hey, let's help travelers experience cities like locals do or destinations like locals do. That's a very authentic way to go about traveling. But the reality is that's not how the majority of people travel. You know, the majority of people do the kind of the mainstream version of traveling. They, you know, they go to a foreign country and they're looking for that familiar golden arches of McDonald's. They're looking for that familiar Starbucks logo. You know, they're looking to do the things that every other person that goes into that city or destination does. But in saying that, there has been a great lane for Localer to go down of reaching those people in the niche, the people who do want that authentic experience. And so our growth has been very, like I said, very word of mouth. I mean, it's we never had hired a PR agency. We never raised institutional venture capital funding. We never got featured on the App Store. A lot of the mainstream things that startups get these days or back or that's last 10 years, we didn't get. It was mostly word of mouth. Even our partnerships that you mentioned with companies like JetBlue and Nike, those were word of mouth. I mean,
Wow.
literally, I was at a conference and then someone in the audience of the conference said, "Hey, my friend runs social media for JetBlue, and I think that she would love Localer." And then 3 weeks later, we had a signed contract for a partnership.
Wow.
So it's been very organic in that way. And so I think that the thing that I have learned from it and what I would impart on others is that you have to be open to, following the business where it goes, or you have to change your point of view on what the business is going to be. And in my case, I followed the business where it wanted to go, which is it never became this massive business. It never and as a venture capitalist told me, I never saw it having the venture returns that, so we didn't raise that money. But the good part about that is that I still own the majority of the business, which a lot of tech startup founders can't say several years into their business, right? So I think it just depends, different strokes, different folks. But for me, what I take pride in with Localer is that from day one to today, we've stayed authentic, we've stayed true to what we set out to do, and we've helped a lot of people along the way.
No, absolutely. Right now, a pretty hot topic is artificial intelligence, right? So considering the advancements in AI, do you currently leverage it all in any capacity? And if not, do you have any potential applications for AI in the future, maybe to
Yeah,
enhance the user
totally. We
experience?
don't leverage it right now, but I am really excited about it. I know there's a lot of fears associated with it, especially for me as a Black founder. I'm really worried about who's building AI and who are they building it for, and is it going to be equitable and inclusive, things like that. But fundamentally, I think AI is going to be and can be interesting. I mean, I tend to think technology is neutral. I'm more worried about people. What people do with something, that's the thing that can be negative. But I think that for Localer, I think there will be use cases for AI. For example, every recommendation on Localer historically has been from a local. So we have locals in 200 plus cities who recommend, this is where I have brunch, this is where I have dinner, this is where I get drinks, that type of thing. But I do think that AI can know things like, okay, if this person is recommending, they're going to Amsterdam for the first time, AI would be able to do things like say, okay, based on what hotel they're staying at, this bar, yes, this bar is three blocks closer than this bar. And but actually the walking path to this bar that's three blocks further is actually prettier for a first-time visitor. So we're going to recommend that one, right? And those are things that AI can use. It can use tap into Google Maps, maybe it could tap into Street View, it could possibly tap into, time of day, weather, all these different things that a person could do, but it would take a lot more time for a person to do. So what I'm looking forward to is getting to a stage where maybe the person is still the one recommending the place, but the time, the context of when it's recommended is something that AI could really assist with.
Yeah, that's funny you said that because I've had some recent interviews where a lot of people like to talk about AI just because it's so interesting right now. But
Yeah.
one of the guests I had actually mentioned how artificial intelligence and industry experts is where it's really going to come together, right? So actually one of them was the traveling industry, and they talked about that where they're putting all their knowledge to this, and then it's a little bit better than like a ChatGPT who's, pretty generic on the answers. Similar to what you kind of your business is about. So that is very interesting. It is exciting to see what the future is going to be about with
Yeah, and
artificial
I think
intelligence.
and another thing I would add to is I think we saw this with social media, where social media did a couple things. One thing it did is it gave platform to people who maybe they were knowledgeable in something, but they didn't have a platform, right? So now they had an audience. I mean, blogging did that even before. But I think another thing that it did is it created an economy. right? So now there's the influencer economy, and now we're seeing the creator economy, things like that. I think with AI, I think we'll see the same thing, but I actually think, unlike the social media, where the economy has been the creator economy, the influencer economy, or people who are kind of sitting on top of the platforms, I think with AI, what we're going to see is we're going to see an economy around people who are inputting into the platform. So I could imagine, for example, you'll have thought leaders. Let's say that ChatGPT learns, hey, this is a highly searched term, but people are generally displeased with the results they get from search, right? So that's where having human input into the large language models and things like that could be really helpful and say, okay, now someone's getting the results they want, and they're not just clicking link after link after link. In an ideal world, the first thing you clicked on Google would be the right answer, right? But it's not necessarily right, because either you can pay to be in number one, or because it's just not the best information, right? Maybe they've scraped other websites and they just put stuff there. Whereas with a person, if there's some type of way to kind of stack rank people's thought leadership, and then you can say, hey, it's not about this being the number one answer. It's that this is the answer from the number one credited source. And so you can decide if that's the person that you want to rely on. So I think those things like are going to be possible. And I think this big, lawsuit that's pending with New York Times and others kind of trying to sue ChatGPT, I think that'll kind of lay the groundwork for individual people to lay claim to what their value is to platforms like ChatGPT.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about. Incredible information. Okay, so I did want to switch gears a little bit on your experience as an advisor to CEOs. So when you're working with these CEOs, what are some common challenges or issues they typically seek advice on, and how do you help them navigate through these challenges?
I've been really fortunate that I've been able to advise a number of people in different industries, governments, nonprofits, for-profits, large sporting events over the years. And the consistent through line, at least for me, I mean, I'm sure there are people who advise them on legal matters or finance matters. For me, the through line has been usually as it relates to the public, either through public affairs, public relations, communications, dealing with a crisis communications type issue. So whether it's the commissioner of the Pac-12 conference, what used to be the Pac-12 conference, that was one of my old clients. To more recently, I was advising the CEO of a national education nonprofit called TNTP. In all these matters, it really had to relate it to communications and public affairs. And the things that came up for all of them were, I would say, twofold. One side is, what's that line between what I know and what the public should know? Because as a CEO, you have to use your own kind of discretion and in terms of things that are confidential versus things that need to be publicly known to convey what you're doing. And so that's one line is, how do you determine what should be known and how to share it, how to properly communicate it. And then I think the other side of that coin, at least for me, has been what is the best channel to share that message in? And especially now in the last 10 years, 10, 15 years, we've seen with social media, it's like when I was starting my career before I was an entrepreneur, I was working in DC in politics. And in the mid 2000s, blogging had just started. And I remember advising clients. And this is back then, this is Volkswagen, the Beijing Olympics. These are big companies. And they would have bloggers that were writing about their issues. And these big companies and their PR departments were only accustomed to dealing with big reporters from New York Times, Washington Post, et cetera. And they didn't really understand how to interact with the bloggers. And a part of my job early on was advising them on, hey, here's how to really engage with these bloggers. They're speaking in first person. So they're not writing on behalf of the New York Times or the Washington Post. They're writing on behalf of themselves and whoever's willing to read them. And so it was a really early taste on social media and what would happen with that, with influencers and creators and things of that nature. And now more recently, it's with TNTP, for example, they announced in late 2021, they hired their first ever Black CEO. And this is a 25-year-old organization in education, mostly working in public schools where the majority of the students happen to be Black. And for the first time, they have a Black CEO. And so a lot of my job was helping her to convey, both the message of the organization and also the message of why it was important for an organization like that to have a Black woman in that position at that time, right? And so, a lot of my job was doing things like helping her with her messages for, she had a keynote speaking opportunity at South by Southwest Festival in 2022. And so it was helping craft the messages there. It was the 25th anniversary of the organization. So a lot of my work helped craft a message around a big conference they had with all their employees then. And so in whether it's, a crisis situation or, this kind of the changing of the guard type of thing, all of these CEOs, I think what they want to understand is how do I tell a story that really engages people and brings people in rather than pushes them away? And that can even when during a crisis, like if you're the CEO of Boeing right now, hopefully he has people who are professionally equipped at really coaching him and that organization through this crisis time of like, oh, what just happened with this flight on with Alaska Airlines, right? So a lot of my work has been in that lane.
Gotcha. When you are approaching these guys or they reach out to you for your services, how long does it take you to kind of get equipped with what you need to know about what's going on and then so you can give them the sound advice that they need?
Yeah, I mean, well, I would say two things. One, most good people in the public affairs, public relations, communications world, they are students of journalism. I don't watch a lot of network news anymore, but I definitely still consume a lot of news through Twitter or formerly Twitter. I read a lot of long journalism. You really have to stay up with current affairs and really just generally understand the context and the conversations that are happening. That's one of your roles. I think the other role is it's really important to be able to sit outside yourself. I started my career after college. I moved to Washington, D.C., and my first job out of college was being the chief speechwriter for the director of FEMA during Hurricane Katrina. So actually what happened is Hurricane Katrina happened. And Michael Brown, who was then the FEMA director, was resi he resigned or was forced out, whatever happened within 2 weeks of Katrina happening. And David Paulson was named the new director of FEMA. And I started with him as his speechwriter. And so my first job was learning how to craft messages that worked for someone else's voice. And I've continued doing that over the years. So I think a big part of this job is being a very quick study on hearing someone talk, hearing someone on a phone call, hearing someone in a meeting, in a town hall, and learning their voice, and then being able to take all the information, all the raw facts and data, and then craft a message that works in their voice.
Wow. It's kind of like you are putting yourself as the AI, like when you're typing out messages, and you want to recreate it, that's kind of like what you're doing,
Well,
but nice.
in a sense, that's kind of what the job is. The job is you're an interpreter more than you're interpreting and you're translating at the same time. Those aren't the same thing. Translating is I'm taking something from English and I'm putting it into Japanese. But interpreting is I'm conveying your message in the tone and the tech content, everything you just said, and I'm interpreting what you're trying to convey, and then I'm restating it, right? And so it's really in a lot of ways. AI, I think, is going to be really good initially at the rote piece of it. It's going to translate, like Google Translate. But humans are still going to need to do is interpreting. And I think that that's where that re symbiosis relationship between AI and people is going to continue to happen is AI is still going to rely on people to do the interpreting.
No, well, that is definitely one amazing talent and skill that you have to be able to do that. And since we're on the topic, being that you're a communication practitioner, how has that helped you leverage storytelling as a tool for leadership, and how has it contributed to your success in building communities?
Man, that's a great question. I love that question because I think about community a lot. I mean, since high school, I was helping, my junior year of high school, I was the vice president, and then in senior year, I was president of an organization called Future Business Leaders of America in my town in Texas. And a lot of what I was doing then was trying to build community. And then in college, I helped start a student-led nonprofit called Dance Marathon at University of Texas to raise money for Children's Hospital in Austin. And that was also about building community. And so I'm really passionate about trying to get people to be together, but not just for themselves, but for a cause or for a mission, for a purpose. So what I've done with my business is the same thing. I had a sneaker boutique in downtown Austin, and the purpose of the business wasn't to sell sneakers. It was to really evangelize a culture in Austin. When I had, you know, with Localer, the nature of the business isn't just to, you know, help people travel. It's to really help people really tap into the communities that they're visiting, so that they're not just extracting, which is what a lot of tourists do, is just extract, but that they're actually leading and putting something in that's just as valuable, whether that's their commerce, whether that's their energy, their attitude, et cetera. And then now with a company that I'm starting, it's in stealth still, the whole theme behind it is generational wealth. And it's really about, how do we help people more easily talk about this kind of this big hairy object that's generational wealth that people don't really have a lot of understanding or education around how to talk about it. A lot of what I'm going to be doing over the next year, especially, is building community around generational wealth.
Wow, that's awesome. Talk about doing it all, man. I mean, you are just a go-getter. You know, it's not one thing you're just focused on. You're doing a million things. So it is incredible and super inspirational. So thank you for sharing all that. And how can listeners connect with you and engage with, you know, your services and Localer?
Yeah, Localer is easy. Localer.com, localeur.com. And with me, I'm at Joe Spearman on everything. So formerly Twitter. LinkedIn is probably the place where I engage the most. It's obviously where we connected. I'm a big fan of LinkedIn. Obviously, there are a lot of flaws with any platform, LinkedIn among them. But I think the thing that I like about LinkedIn the most is that, to my point about community being something that's not just self-serving, but that's serving the greater good. I think one of my issues with some of the other social platforms is that they do seem really self-serving. And they've even created the kind of influencer and creator economy as a way to say, hey, you know, make this thing work for you, which I think is there's nothing wrong with it. But I prefer LinkedIn because I think it's built something where, you know, someone like me, for example, you know, by me doing what I do professionally, I've been able to connect with like-minded people, whether that's other, you know, Black founders who want someone who has raised money and they want insights on that, or people who want more insight into entrepreneurship, or people who want more insight into building their careers and mentorship, or, you know, role models, things like that. And I like the idea that LinkedIn is more topical, more than cultural. And because I think that, you know, one of the issues with traditional social media, I think, is that it's so ephemeral. You know, it's something is in one day, it's out the other day. Right. Whereas a career isn't about a job. It's not about a salary. It's not about a 9-to-5. A career really is about a reputation. And it's about building and crafting a reputation over time, so that your actions meet up with your words. And as a result of that, that also matches up with your reputation and how people know you.
Right.
And so that's something that I've tried to do, whether I'm consulting, whether I'm starting businesses, whether I'm failing, whether I'm succeeding, that reputation stays the same and ideally, you know, solid.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think LinkedIn is definitely the epitome of connecting professionally. I mean, you and I probably wouldn't have connected if it wasn't for LinkedIn. I mean, trying to find people on any other social media site is difficult. You can join groups, but I mean, those ones with 250,000 people that are part of those groups, trying to sift through that, seeing what their profession is is difficult. You can go into LinkedIn, search entrepreneur or CEO or, you know, anything in that. I mean, it's assisted me big time, you know, trying to get guests, speaking with people and connecting with some incredible people across the country, you yourself included, you know, so I couldn't agree more. So connect with you on LinkedIn, localer.com, anywhere else.
Those are the best. I mean, okay. I think that, and like I said, I every day I'm like, should I get off of Twitter? Cause it's not really Twitter anymore.
Okay.
But as of right now, I'm still on there. So people can engage with me on there too.
Perfect. All right. Sounds good. And I'll make sure those are all in the show notes as well. Awesome. All right. Well, Joe, I do appreciate you spending time with us today. I do have one question before we go. Given your background and experiences, what advice do you have for aspiring entrepreneurs, particularly those from underrepresented backgrounds?
I would almost convey this not as advice, but as a strong recommendation. Try to get paid to learn. Really. There are too many people who I've met who said, oh, I'm going to start a new business, or I have an idea for an app, or I have a concept, and And like I mentioned with my, I've started businesses before, but I knew that there was a point in my career where I needed to take a job to give me the right foundation to go and try to execute business at a bigger level later on. And sometimes it's better to get paid to learn. Go take a job, even if it's for 6 months, a year, or 2 years, in either in the industry you want to be in or around the customers you want to be serving with in the future, because that can be, even more valuable than something like a higher education degree, like a master's degree or a PhD or something.